Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Islamic Republic Day. The Islamic Revolution in Iran triumphed on 11th of February 1979. Less than 2 months after this greatest event of the 20th century, the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, called on people to take part in a referendum to determine the type of system of government in Iran. Therefore, on 30th and 31st of March 1979, the nationwide referendum was held, and over 98.2% of the participants voted yes to the Islamic Republic as the ruling system in the country. Thus, 1st of April was named as the Islamic Republic Day in the Iranian calendar. This way of determination and formation of the ruling system has not had any precedent in history, even in the so-called democratic societies of the West. In view of the fact that the Iranian nation is a Muslim nation and had struggled for Islam for decades, especially with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, some officials and analysts maintained that there was no need to hold a referendum. But the Imam insisted on a clear and public referendum. The founder of the Islamic Republic said in his message to the Iranian people, "This referendum will determine the fate of our nation. This referendum will either draw you to freedom and independence or, like before, to suffocation and dependence on others. This referendum is what everyone should participate in. You can choose any form that you want. You have the right and are able to write on this paper democratic republic, royal regime, or whatever you want. You are free in this." On this great day, the faithful Iranian people demonstrated their national unity and Islamic solidarity with their decisive vote to fortify the basis of the Islamic Revolution. They altered the history of mankind with their fateful election. The Iranian people dismantled a long history of despotism, oppression, and disgraceful colonialism for good. The Islamic Republic has been the most democratic system of government in the past centuries, for superior to the democratic rule which has been claimed and propagated for decades by hired thinkers and writers in the West. The Islamic Republic is built up of two parts, Islam and the people. That's why the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, insists on calling it religious popular rule rather than man-made flawed Western democracy, which has proved its deficiencies and even contradictions with the votes of people. The establishment of the Islamic Republic not only proved the Iranian nation's will and their fate, but it also inspired hope in the hearts of the oppressed and downtrodden in the world. The late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, called 1st of April as a feast and said in a message, "The morning of 1st of April, which is the first day of Allah's rule, is one of our greatest religious and national feasts. Our nation should hold this day as feast and keep it alive." Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "There is another feature in our Islamic Republic Day, namely, it is not the feast of us, the Iranian people, rather it can be the feast of all those who are Muslims. It means nearly 1 billion people worldwide. They, meaning the Muslim nations, have also got used to seeing Islam in the state of defense and passive position, in the state of isolation. When a nation stands in the position of attacking the domineering powers and aggressive, incomplete man-made systems and proclaims a republic on the basis of Islam, this is certainly something to be proud of and take honor in for Muslim nations. In short, there are various features in the Islamic Republic Day." Clearly, the formation of the Islamic Republic system in Iran created a new theory among the political theories of the East and the West. Article 56 of Iran's constitution reads, "Absolute rule over the world and human being belongs to God, and it is He who has made human being ruler of his social fate. Nobody can dispossess human beings of this divine right or put it at the service of the interests of a special individual or a special group of people. And the nation wields this God-given right in the ways that will come in the next articles." The establishment of the Islamic Republic system of government in Iran, besides domestic developments, caused different changes in the region and the wider world, which were not compliant with the unholy goals of the colonialist powers. In view of this, the enemies of Islam and the Iranian nation hatched various plots to topple this system of government. These plots began since the first days of the victory of the Islamic Revolution and escalated after the formation of the Islamic Republic of Iran. They included the imposition of an 8-year war on Iran, assassination of political, religious and revolutionary figures and officials, sanctions on Iran's economy, creation of barriers on the way of achieving peaceful nuclear energy, assassination of scientists, especially nuclear scientists in Iran, and commanders of the resistance front, and fomenting riots in various Iranian cities. Now the Islamic Revolution has arrived at its 46th year, and the Islamic Republic has already started the second phase of its life. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says, "Why has the Islamic Republic not suffered the destiny of other systems and other revolutions despite this much hostility? What is the reason and the mystery? I tell you that the splendid and honorable mystery of the system and its longevity is because of these two words, Republic and Islamic. The juxtaposition of these two words and the system of government, which is based upon these two words, should naturally be permanent. Both the Republic and the Islamic, people and Islam. Republic means people and Islamic means Islam, religious popular rule. The feat of our great Imam was that he created this thought, this theory, the theory of the Islamic Republic, brought it among various political theories, as in that era different political theories were in contact with each other in the East and the West in the field of political issues and political mentalities. He realized this new system of government, it was not merely the creation of a theory, but he materialized it and created the Islamic Republic. This was Imam Khomeini's greatest feat.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, asking for forgiveness in the holy month of Ramadan as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, an honor to be here in the holy month of Ramadan at your service. So, dear friends, we are talking about asking for forgiveness in the holy month of Ramadan as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Now, asking for forgiveness is a very important thing that we must do in the holy month of Ramadan. The Almighty Allah in many places, whether it is the Holy Quran or the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam, has talked about how this is the month of forgiveness, and this is a month in which the sins are forgiven. Now, this is kind of like a very, you know, easy form or easy time for us to be able to ask for forgiveness, right? Because it seems like that the other months of the year, yes, we can be forgiven, but it seems like the holy month of Ramadan has a special emphasis on it when it comes to asking for forgiveness, one, two, receiving forgiveness. So this is why it's been highly encouraged to not only ask for forgiveness in this holy month of Ramadan, but also to believe and hope that the Almighty Allah has forgiven us, keeping in mind that this should not lead us towards becoming arrogant or haughty or, you know, proud or these kind of things. We always have to be humble, even when it comes to having hope in receiving the forgiveness of the Almighty Allah. But this is the best opportunity, the holy month of Ramadan, in which we should be asking for forgiveness and on a regular basis. It shouldn't be something that we do on and off, something that, you know, we do one day and then the rest of the 28 or 29 days we have nothing to do with seeking forgiveness. Actually, seeking forgiveness and istighfar in its various, you know, verbal forms, because you can say astaghfirullah, astaghfirullah wa atubu ilay, astaghfirullah rabbi wa atubu ilay. So in the different forms, this istighfar is incredibly important.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about istighfar and seeking forgiveness in this holy month of Ramadan in our Islamic lifestyle. Of course, you know, after so many programs on A to Z about the holy month of Ramadan, if nothing else, we have definitely learned that in the holy month of Ramadan, the things that we learn and the things that we inculcate and practice in these 29 or 30 days are things that we should try our best to continue throughout the rest of our year and our life, and thus it becomes a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So we're talking about seeking forgiveness, and you know, really it's incredibly important to seek forgiveness in this holy month because it is relatively so much more easier to be forgiven in this holy month than other holy months, right? So in the holy month of Ramadan, during these best of days and these best of nights, as the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, we should ask for istighfar and we should ask for the forgiveness of the Almighty Allah, and we should repent and turn back to the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, there are different forms. We don't have too much time to get into it, but very quickly, I'll try my best. You know, one is this verbal saying or repetition of the word Astaghfirullah. And so this repetition of the word and realizing that Astaghfirullah is this kind of a request from the Almighty Allah to be forgiven, that's one level. Then the levels that come after that, of course, deal with one actually remembering the different errors or mistakes that have occurred in one's life and really actively asking for forgiveness for those things, being ashamed, being regretful. And then after that, to try one's best to not go back and commit those things. And if, God forbid, for whatever reason, we do end up committing the same sin again afterwards, to again ask for forgiveness and again never stop asking for forgiveness and never stop trying to stop sinning. Eventually, by the grace of the Almighty Allah, you will succeed. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan.
In the limelight.
Palestinian children in Gaza are not starving to death because farmers had a dry season. The starvation of children is a political choice made by the Zionist regime and buoyed by the Biden administration's complicity. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, 28 Palestinians, nearly all children, have starved to death in Gaza in recent days, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. Tomorrow, that number will increase, and the next day, it will climb even higher. Starvation is not a death of natural causes in a world that grows and produces more than enough food to feed everyone. Palestinian children in Gaza are not starving to death because farmers had a dry season. The starvation of children is a political choice made by the Zionist regime and buoyed by the Biden administration's complicity. Israeli regime authorities have continually blocked and severely restricted the entry of humanitarian aid into Gaza. So far in March, an average of 168 aid trucks have crossed into Gaza on a daily basis, far below the 500 trucks that entered Gaza daily before October 7th, and nowhere close to what is needed to prevent more children from starving to death. Very little, if any, of the aid reaches isolated Palestinians in northern Gaza, and Israeli regime forces have attacked Palestinians trying to reach it. On February 29th, around 120 Palestinians were killed after Israel opened fire on a crowd of hungry people trying to get aid from a convoy of trucks in Gaza City in what was dubbed the Flower Massacre. Those in the crowd were desperate for a bag of flour to make bread for their families. The massacre received some condemnation from world leaders, but as usual, no one took any concrete action to hold the Zionist regime forces accountable to ensure it never happens again. The Biden administration, for its part, seems to have given up on using its influence to pressure Israeli regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to allow aid trucks into Gaza. Just a day after the Flower Massacre, President Joe Biden announced that the United States would airdrop aid into northern Gaza, a move quickly criticized by humanitarian groups as inefficient, ineffective, and widely expensive compared to trucks, which can carry much more and have been lined up outside of Rafah crossing waiting to enter. In addition, airdrops come without a distribution plan. Those who are strongest and fastest can get to the aid first, while those who are sick and weak go without. The airdrops were a public relations move from the outset, and they turned deadly when parachutes malfunctioned and the falling boxes killed five Palestinians. The irony of the United States funding both the bombs and the aid boxes falling from the sky that kill Palestinians is lost on nobody. Biden's latest plan to build a floating pier where aid can be delivered to Gaza leaves more questions than answers. How long will it take? How much will it cost? What is the distribution plan? Is it anything more than a cover to set up a U.S. military base off the coast of Gaza? For the children of Gaza, the answers will come too late. Humanitarian and hunger experts comprising the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, IPC, Famine Review Committee issued a report on December 21st, raising the alarm that 80% of Palestinians in Gaza were in Phase 4, emergency, or phase 5, catastrophe, on the scale of acute food insecurity. The report also warned that the risk of famine increases every day as conditions worsen. That report was published more than 3 months ago, and many of its predictions have come true. Palestinians, including children, are dying of hunger. Recently, the IPC issued an updated report indicating that famine is imminent in North Gaza between now and May, and that the conditions necessary to prevent famine have not been met since its first report was issued in December. We have no time to lose. Malnutrition is a slow death affecting young children, the elderly, people with disabilities, and pregnant and breastfeeding women first. It is both preventable and treatable if enough healthy food is available and doctors have the necessary resources. UNICEF estimates that when children with severe acute malnutrition are treated, there is an 80 to 90% rate of success. In a place like Gaza, where Israeli regime forces kill Palestinians trying to reach bags of flour and severely restrict the amount of aid that enters, that rate plummets. The health ministry has confirmed that 24 children in Gaza have died of malnutrition and dehydration, but the official count only includes children who were hospitalized or whose families reported their deaths to the ministry. Which is to say, we don't really know the true scale of how many children are starving to death in Gaza. The healthcare system has collapsed, and with continuous Israeli regime airstrikes and ground troops occupying Gaza, many Palestinians aren't able to reach the few hospitals that are still operating. There is not enough clean water or food, and diseases such as diarrhea, which prevents the absorption of nutrients, are spreading rapidly. Genocide is not only the mass killing of a population. It also involves attacking the conditions that make life possible, sources of food, water, medicine, and more. Children in Gaza cannot wait for Biden to airdrop enough food for 2 million people or build a pier in the Mediterranean Sea large enough to accept cargo ships or whatever plan he will announce next week to demonstrate how unserious his administration is about preventing Palestinian children from starving to death. Palestinian children need a lasting ceasefire that guarantees Israeli regime authorities will permit huge amounts of humanitarian aid to enter, and they need it today.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Islamite. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Youth Station. It's Youth Station for you. I'm your humble co-host, Muzaffar Haider.
And I am Asma.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
What age is appropriate for death? That is the question that we are going to be discussing today.
Yeah.
What age would you like to die, Sister?
The Asper? Sooner the better.
The sooner the better. I knew you were going to say that. I feel like that sometimes as well. That is what studying English literature does to you guys. It makes you want to die as soon as possible. I felt like that before until I really studied and looked at what death actually is. It's really terrifying if we haven't detached ourselves from our souls.
And now God is there and He's so kind, so He won't let me alone in that journey.
God, that's so true. Man, yeah, I want to die too. I can't wait. Like, it's going to be so cool. It's Peter Pan, he says.
Whatever it is, I know that death is very difficult. I know that means you have to put everything behind, like all the emotional strings you have with your dear ones, you have to just break them, as in temporarily, of course. Yeah. And then you have to forget about all the dreams you have. The journey is very difficult, but still, whenever I think of the kindness of Allah and how much He loves me, yeah, then I would make sure that He's not going to leave me alone in that journey.
So
the other world is going to be a better place than this world, in which we have too much of traumas, miseries, wars, children are getting killed. People are dying, and I'm just sitting doing nothing.
Okay. Wait, you've given me too many things to say on that. Okay, look. First of all, the Holy Quran says, "Ya ayyuhal insan, O human beings, innaka kadihun ila rabbika kadham famulaqi." Surely you are striving, hard striving, and you are certainly going to meet Him.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So at the end of all this struggle and turmoil and chaos that we're having to face here, we are eventually going to meet our Lord. And it is a beautiful thing.
Of course.
In one sense. The other thing is, Imam Ali alayhi salam was asked, would you prefer to worship Allah in this world or in Jannah? What do you think he said?
In this world, of course.
Why?
Because out of these difficulties comes the beauty of your worship.
Ahsantum. So he actually said, because when I worship my Lord in Jannah, I am pleased with Him.
Yeah.
But when I worship my Lord in this world, He is pleased with me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's so beautiful. Also, sister, also, there is a hadith very profound. He says, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, I would prefer to die having lived a long life. I don't want to die when I'm a young child, because then I want to understand my Lord before I go to meet Him.
Mm-hmm.
This journey of life is all about understanding, like gaining that understanding of Allah before we go to meet Him in the hereafter, inshallah. So, yeah, I mean, we're not supposed to want to die, sister, is my point.
Of course.
This is a golden opportunity.
Yeah, I was just pouring my heart out to you guys.
I feel the same. I feel exactly the same.
But I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are listening to us would have the same idea. Like, death at a younger age,
sister,
is pretty much better than death in an old age. When
yes,
you are so unable and so weak and so feeble,
Peter
and
Pan.
You're
that's
dependent
what,
on other people.
That's what I was going to say about Peter Pan. You know about Peter Pan, right? He goes, the pirates threaten him and they say, we're going to kill you. And he says, to die would be a great adventure. And he stays young forever. anyway, I don't like Peter Pan.
You know, actually, there's a novel.
Yeah.
The Persian translation of book is literally as in Hamimi Mirand, like everybody is going to die.
Okay.
Everybody will eventually die. What happens in this book is that there is a person who cannot die. Like he's been living for too many centuries and he cannot die. There is no way out of death. When you read this book, as you come to the ending of this book, actually it starts from the very beginning, you would come to realize that death is a blessing.
Okay.
And if there was no death in life, then life would have been an eternal torture.
What? There was this group of people, they prayed to Allah and they say, oh Allah, take away death from us.
Mm-hmm.
So the prophet of their time, he prays, and Allah takes away death from them.
And they got old,
they got,
I guess.
Older and older and older. And then it got to a point where a person was looking after their children and their parents and their parents' parents and their parents' parents and their grandparents and their great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents. And they were they said, oh Allah, please give us death back.
Mm-hmm.
This is unbearable.
Yeah. So it's a blessing. By mentioning that book, all I wanted to say is that, yes, true, we should not pray for death because that's not what Ahlul Bayt has taught us, and because that's not what God wants from us, because life is supposed to be a nice journey, a nice opportunity for you to flourish. But then, at the same time, we as ordinary common human beings, we would come to this point that we take it as maybe easy and common as we could understand it. Like sometimes death is a turning point in your life. like what happens in many stories.
Like death, somebody else dying, you mean?
What?
Like somebody else dying is a turning point.
No. My own death. Okay. I'm not talking about anybody, because other people's death is going to be a suffering to me.
Right.
It's not going to be a turning point. But
yeah.
In our lives, as just the examples that you gave, and in this book, if you go through it, you would understand that sometimes death is a blessing. Well, let's go for a short break, and then we'd be, we'd be back.
To get even more negative. Welcome back, guys. If you're still there, we're talking about death.
Such a nice topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So many of the people out there are probably listening to us and they're going, no, it's just you two. You two are the only ones who feel this way. I like my life. Astaghfirullah. No, we're not.
And you know, that's because of too much of attachments. When I was younger, I was afraid of death. So much afraid of death. And then, actually, I was a child back in time. So, and then I grew much more into this much more mature version of myself. And I came to realize that the more of attachments you have into this world, the more you're going to be scared of death.
Yeah.
But the more you prepare yourself for the other world, the more you watch every single step you take in this world, then you're going to be more prepared for it. Like, you're not going to take it as a negative thing. It's going to be a new life. It's a new sparkle. And a new one, which is so much more beautiful than the one we had.
Stop it, sister. You're going to make me cry. I can't wait. No, astaghfirullah. You know what we can ask for is a good death.
Mm-hmm.
A good death.
Exactly.
That's what's really important. Yeah. Well, they often pray for akhibat bekhair, right?
Exactly.
To have a good outcome of your life. Make it all be something worth it.
To end it beautifully.
End it beautifully, yeah.
With honor.
Every novel that you read, you know, the ending is so important. Mm-hmm. And when the ending is a downer, you're just like, oh, you kind of forget the entire story.
I hate it when they leave it open.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, then, inshallah, I pray that yours is not open. You know?
Of course it's not open.
You get closure.
Of course it is not open. For us, it has an absolute enclosure.
Yeah, in the hereafter, though. Not when you die. Your death might be completely unexpected, you know. It might be really shocking.
Yeah,
you might
right
be walking down
for
the
example
street.
Like if I just crossed this door and then I died.
People die in all sorts of weird ways.
Yeah,
have you seen it? There's a series we used to watch in England. It was called Horrible Histories.
No,
oh, come on, you got to watch Horrible Histories. Just type in Horrible Histories.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about different things that actually happened in history, or at least they have records
nice.
Of them. And they're presented for children, like in a really funny, comedic, childish way. And there's one skit that they
had
on there.
Thank you for suggestion.
No, it's really cool, though. I could still watch it. There's one called Stupid Deaths. And it has a guy dressed up like the Angel of Death.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a whole line of people who are queuing up. Historical figures who died in really stupid ways. Yeah, loads of people have died in really stupid ways.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And God protect us from a death like that.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We cannot wish for death, but we can wish for an honorable death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to be old. Old age is really, really scary. Your bones start aching. You know what? One of the scariest things about it is you're going to see the generation after you picking up new slang and technology that you don't understand. And you start to see them doing things that, you know.
The fact that you feel you do not fit the time is so horrible.
Oh, your friends are going to be dead.
Yeah.
Your parents and your whole...
Like, everybody's gone and you're the only one who's out there.
Let me tell you something really scary. One day, somebody is going to remember your name for the last time.
Yeah.
And after that, nobody's going to remember you again.
Well, let's hope it's not like that. Let's hope that our name is going to be there forever.
Why would it be there forever? Can you...
Like you do something good... Like yeah, I mean, you if we write do something worthy. Good, like you contribute something to this world, which is going to be so phenomenal.
But if you do something too good, they'll end up deifying you, and that's even worse. Corona times, suicide increased a lot.
Oh, yeah, because everybody was isolated in their home. Yeah. So.
Everybody was just like thinking.
Or they were just facing the true reality of life.
And human beings, people really revealed themselves. How
like,
weird
as
they are.
In life, you are a loner. Like, actually, for those people who do not believe in God, like in real life, you are an a lonely traveler who's just wandering around so lonely.
It's really scary.
Yeah, but when you have God and you have a connection and a spiritual bond, then. No matter how lonely you are sure that there is someone who's always there and whose protection and support is coming from nowhere, nowhere that you could think of.
Yeah, subhanAllah. But that still makes death seem appealing, to be honest, like, because then you can cut out everybody else.
Yeah.
You know? I think, who was it? Some thinker, he said that death is other people.
Who
is that?
I have heard that quote, but I don't remember who is it from. Death is other people.
Yeah. I mean, if you could just be completely alone.
Or maybe hell is, maybe this world is other planets hell. So I guess this was all. There is no ending to this topic because it's so interesting and fascinating.
If we survive, we will see you next time, inshallah.
Inshallah, yes. More. Let's hope so. This was all. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you, brother, and thank you to your listeners. Until another time, I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that, inshallah, in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, 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 Allah.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
The blood of the Palestinian martyrs and the tears of their children will always remain an eloquent, if tragic, testimony to the utter hypocrisy of Western human rights crusaders and the prevalent unjust world order. Just as apartheid was declared a crime against humanity and a threat to world peace, there cannot be peace in the world with the presence of Zionism. Zionism and the Zionist entity should not be allowed to exist in the community of nations. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, Even before the creation of Israel from the rib of terrorism, this settler colonial entity weaved a web of lies and myths to hide its litany of crimes against humanity. This apartheid entity developed a very sophisticated propaganda machine known as Hasbara. Hollywood played a role in spreading these myths, producing films such as The Exodus and Ben-Hur. Mainstream media spread lies such as land without people for a people without land, that Zionism was a national liberation movement. It called resistance by the indigenous occupied people terrorism. The ethnic cleansing and collective punishment were enabled by the United States of America, Britain, Germany, France, and other settler colonial states such as Australia, New Zealand, and Canada. All these countries were settler colonial entities that decimated the indigenous populations of the lands they occupied. These same countries continue to support the apartheid Zionist entity with arms, diplomatic cover, and financial aid. What possesses a people, themselves erstwhile victims, that can perpetrate such horrendous crimes we have been witnessing for the last 6 months in Gaza? Zionist ideology is a fundamental pillar of Israel. It is a racist, apartheid settler colonial state that believes Palestine should be exclusively Jewish, without any Palestinians, Muslim, or Christians. They insist that Palestinians must be expelled from that land. It perfected an ideology that dehumanized the indigenous population. It regards the indigenous population as subhuman, unleashing its military might that would inflict death and destruction on the innocent, infants, and women. The perpetrators of such horrors have no conscience, are without remorse, and act with impunity. Zionism indoctrinated into the Jewish people of a toxic mix of fear, anti-Palestinian sentiment, rewarding Israeli settler colonialists for aggression against Palestinians, all of which has bred a lack of empathy in Israelis towards the Palestinians. Fear among Israelis is sustained through militarization, reframing resistance as terrorism, remembering past atrocities such as the Holocaust, constant accusations of anti-Semitism, and focusing on perceived and manufactured threats. These ensure the settler population's continued support for aggressive, expansionist, racist, and genocidal policies. All settler colonial endeavors, including South Africa's, typically depend on depicting the targeted territory as uninhabited and its existing inhabitants as inhuman barbarians unworthy of any land. This portrayal allowed Zionists to displace the indigenous population of Palestine without moral columns, portraying the establishment of Israel not as the destruction of a people, but as the construction of a civilized villa in the jungle. And if there is any resistance by the indigenous population, call them simply terrorists. The South Africans know well that the terrorist label is in fact a badge of honor. South Africa's former president, Nelson Mandela, was on the U.S. terrorist list right up to 2008. Zionism is a racist settler colonialist movement, which opportunistically coupes aspects of Judaism. This enterprise is based on the mass expulsion of the Palestinians and usurpation of their land for the exclusive use of Jews. Zionism means occupation, ethnic cleansing, unending massacres, bombardment of entire civilian population, wars of aggression, dispossession, exile, systematic racism, and apartheid-style separation. Zionism means that there will be massacres until the establishment of a Jewish-only state in Palestine. Jewish in the sense of giving privileges to Jews and denying almost all the rights of the indigenous Palestinians. It is not surprising, then, that they would ignore the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, international humanitarian law, and arrogantly dismiss any judgments by any international institution that rule against Israel. Just as white supremacy in South Africa gave rise to apartheid, Bantustans, inferior education, job reservation, group areas, etc., Jewish supremacy in Palestine gave rise to apartheid, exclusively expulsion, and now genocide. Unless the occupiers of Palestine are de-Zionized, injustice against the Palestinians will continue. There will be no end to the killings because it has become embedded in the psyche of the Zionists to dominate and enslave those it perceives as lesser human beings. They have done this for the last 75 years without accountability. It is the courage of the South African government that, for the first time in the Zionist regime's history, it has been taken to task for its egregious crimes against humanity. And this challenge is not only against the racist Israeli entity, but also against those Western regimes that back Israel and the shameless Arab rulers who care more about protecting their illegitimate thrones than human rights and justice. The world today is divided between a minority of powerful imperialist white supremacists and their puppets who support the genocide of the Palestinians and the majority of the people who do not. The ICJ decision places the Zionist regime squarely in the company of genocidal white colonial settler societies. As South Africa's moral voice, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, stated, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor." The Palestinian struggle for liberation, self-determination, and self-rule is actually a war. They fight on behalf of the liberation of the exploited masses in the global south. The blood of the Palestinian martyrs and the tears of their children will always remain an eloquent, if tragic, testimony to the utter hypocrisy of Western human rights crusaders and the prevalent unjust world order. Just as apartheid was declared a crime against humanity and a threat to world peace, there cannot be peace in the world with the presence of Zionism. Zionism and the Zionist entity should not be allowed to exist in the community of nations.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
In this episode, we want to present to you an extract from the speech of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, about non-Muslims astonished by Nahjul Balagha of Imam Ali alayhi salam. It is necessary to read and learn from Nahjul Balagha. Recently, many non-Muslim intellectuals have become familiar with Nahjul Balagha. They have read the words of the Commander of the Faithful. They have learned from the manifestation of wisdom in his words, and they have been astonished by the greatness of the commander of the faithful, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and his words. We should pay much more attention to Nahjul Balagha. We should learn more from its teachings. We should benefit more from Imam Ali's sea of wisdom. Nahjul Balagha clarified all aspects and provides us with all the lessons that we need. Sunni scholars have made surprising comments about Nahjul Balagha. The commander of the faithful does not just belong to Shia Muslims. All Muslims and all those who love Islam see Ali ibn Abi Talib as the peak of scholarly, spiritual, moral, human, and divine greatness. All Muslims and all those who love Islam see Ali ibn Abi Talib at the peak of scholarly, spiritual, moral, human, and divine greatness.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
One criterion is that there were seemingly two conflicting sets of characteristics in the commander of the faithful. The first one was steadfastness, resistance, and strictness. Another one was leniency, compassion, and clemency. These qualities existed in the commander of the faithful to their perfection. He was steadfast and strict in the face of every evasive course of action. In the face of oppression, oppressors, deviation from the path of God, transgression, and greed, the commander of the faithful will stand up against these matters with complete steadfastness and power. His resistance against those conditions is unprecedented to this very day. He also behaved in a completely sensitive and delicate manner when it came to divine remembrance and dhikr. He behaved similarly towards the oppressed, underprivileged, and vulnerable classes of a society.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
Of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
On the third Friday of Ramadan, tens of thousands of Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a and several other cities, renewing their unwavering support for Palestinians. Some held banners that read, "We are entering the 10th year and the Palestinian cause remains our priority."
We're entering the 10th year of our resistance against an all-out war on the Yemeni people. We are here today to show our continuous support for the Palestinians in Gaza and across the occupied territories. When the countries that possess enormous military capabilities failed to support the Palestinians in Gaza and even conspired with the Israeli regime against them, the war-stricken Yemenis came out to support their oppressed brothers. They left the world in awe with the united front and a soaring popularity in the region.
Protesters chanted slogans vowing to retaliate against the US and the UK airstrikes on the Yemeni cities. They also pledged to escalate their naval operations as long as the Israeli onslaught on Palestinians and the aggression against Yemen continue. Yemenis also slammed the United Nations Security Council for its failure to put an end to the Israeli atrocities in Palestine, despite its recent ceasefire resolution.